Hello. Welcome to Syracuse Speaks, The View from the AHL, a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast. I'm your host, Alex Ackerman. Let's get started.
Hey, Crunch fans. Welcome back. I am talking to you today from the brand new headquarters of Syracuse Speaks, which is my new apartment down in the Southern Tier. I am all moved in. I started my new job yesterday, so I'm really excited about a lot of the major changes that have happened in my life, but I'm also really excited to get back to the podcast and get back to talking to you all about the thing that we love and probably have in common, the Syracuse Crunch. So a lot has happened since we last sat down with each other. And in fact, one of those major things that happened on the actual day that I was moving from my former apartment in the Finger Lakes down to the Southern Tier. So that timing was slightly inconvenient. I was not able to pay as much attention to it as I would have liked to because of that. But regardless, we're here now. And so what went on? Syracuse Crunch has a new head coach, a new assistant coach, and will probably, if they decide to add on a third assistant coach and potentially replace the goalie coach that's been working with the Crunch the past couple of seasons, brand new people in those positions as well. Back at the end of June, the Lightning named Joel Bouchard, head coach of the Syracuse Crunch, and Daniel Jacob to the assistant coach position. So Bouchard is a little bit younger than Ben Grew, although reports say that they're pretty good friends. Bouchard is 49, Grew is 55. So generation is still the same. I'm not entirely sure what the disconnect between Coach Grew and his team was over the past couple of seasons. Because let's be honest here, a lot of us have seen that there was some kind of a disconnect. And I think it became more obvious this past season than the season before, which is the timing of this is interesting, right? Because it came out after Bouchard was hired that Coach Grew had 1 year left on his current contract with the team. So apparently last summer, Lightning general manager Julian Brisebois and Coach Grew sat down and were like, does the team need a new voice? Does the team need a new coach? Should I, as Coach Grew, leave? They decided to leave him on for one more season. Why? I don't know. It seems like to me that it would have made more sense to replace him when there was 2 years left in his contract versus only 1 year. But hey, whatever. Maybe the right coach that the Lightning was looking for wasn't available. I have no idea. We'll probably never know. So last summer they sat down. Should we do this? No. Okay, fine. Coach Grew comes back for one more year. And I think that whatever they talked about last summer, the disconnect, the needing a new voice in the dressing room, that became strikingly more obvious over this past season. And I'm not entirely sure what happened there. I don't know why he ended up with this disconnect. You know, we'll probably never know what happened. But the way that the team never quite gelled, despite somehow managing to pull off enough wins in the North Division to end up second in the division and, you know, be competitive on the ice, let's say 50% of the time, you know, whatever reason, there was a clear issue going on. The chemistry never quite gelled. The famous Coach Grew midseason turnaround where the team gets with his program and does the thing never really happened, you know, and I think we'll always be left wondering what that group last season would have been capable of had that gelling midseason actually occurred. But regardless, it didn't. So we're here, right? Okay, this is what we have. So over all of this, Brisebois to me has been the most interesting person to hear quotes from because, you know, I love this quote from him from the official release. The head coach position for our American Hockey League affiliate is one of paramount importance with regard to our player development program. Side note, the Lightning also shook things up at their level and ousted Al Murray, who's been the head of the scouting team and player development for forever, and put a new person into that role recently too. So obviously, the Lightning is becoming increasingly aware of the fact that the stock at the AHL level is not where it should be and is not what it has had previously. Now, is that somewhat the Lightning's fault because they've traded away a bunch of draft picks and prospects and have been focusing more on trying to win another Stanley Cup in the moment than doing the whole development long-term plan thing that got them two prior Stanley Cups twice in a row? Yes, yes, it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Yes, it is. So it's interesting that they're trying to change personnel, but as we'll soon talk to, not necessarily changing strategies. Not sure where this is going to go, but okay, whatever. In referencing Coach Bouchard, Brisebois said that he brings a contagious enthusiasm to everything he undertakes. That does make me wonder if maybe Coach Grew was just tired of the AHL grind. We know that he's been trying to get into an NHL job for a little while now. We know that it's probably been weighing on him that he hasn't been able to. Mentally, that's really hard. When Brent Axe talked to Grew just recently, Grew made the comment that he was questioning himself, that yes, he was still happy with what he was doing in Syracuse. Yes, he still loves the team. Yes, he still loves the fans, but that there just seemed to be something that was off. Ben felt that maybe he needs another new challenge. He just said that him and Brisebois were very honest with each other. And in talking with Brent, Coach Grew actually questioned his investment if he went back for that final year of his contract that was coming up this summer. So, you know, I think that from all indications, this change needed to be made, and it's good that it happened. You know, I think that Ben even says in this article, which is kind of interesting, that he doesn't think he even wants to stay in the AHL anymore. So, you know, the Lightning clearly weren't going to promote him. A lot of the times AHL coaches get their breaks in the NHL by being promoted internally. There are very few NHL organizations that are going to take a chance on an unknown AHL coach. I talked the last time on this podcast about how if that was going to happen for Coach Grew, it would probably have to be someone that he already had a friendship and a relationship with, just because they would know what Coach Grew would bring to the table versus an unknown AHL entity that they wouldn't. So, you know, I think that this was a good time for everyone involved. I think that, you know, Crunch fans have a lot to be thankful for when it comes to Coach Grew. And I think he is happy to acknowledge that as well. The player development that happened under him, especially at the beginning of his coaching tenure, was fantastic. You know, and of course, at the beginning of his coaching tenure, we can't talk about him without discussing Syracuse's run to the Calder Cup Finals that season. You know, yes, the team ultimately fell short in a way that was painstakingly similar to how they fell short in 2013. But regardless, that memory of that team and what Coach Grew did with that team is still really present in Crunch fans' minds. So it's important to acknowledge that the most winningest coach in Syracuse history definitely left his mark on this team. But I do think that it's time. You know, and there seems to be some really good indications that he's ready to come into Syracuse for a fresh start. When Patrick Williams talked with him, and you can read Patrick's article over at theahl.com from June 29th, if you're looking for Brent Axe's discussion with Coach Grew, that was posted on syracuse.com on June 28th. So just in case, I want to make sure to give a shout out to both of those people, because with the lack of a consistent beat reporter for Syracuse, really, that Patrick and Brent are some of the main people besides myself that cover the team right now. So their work is invaluable to people like me without an quote unquote insider's view of what's going on, because they're where I get my information from. So make sure to look up the two articles from those two gentlemen, because they're really, really good. But Bouchard talks about the franchise as one that's exciting. And, you know, he discusses the fact that he wants to give everything that he has. He wants to encourage players to become the best versions of themselves. And also that he has the unique vision and the unique experiences that maybe Coach Grew didn't have as much of, having been a player in the American Hockey League, having been sent down, been called up, been injured, have to fix those things. So maybe it'll be a little bit easier for him to make connections with some of these players. He also talks about the fact that he likes to think that he's demanding, that he has a very high bar, and that that's going to help these players reach the NHL. That's what they're there for. He wants to do that for them. He previously coached in the American Hockey League with Laval. Two of those seasons, he coached for three total seasons. Two were shortened by the pandemic. And he also had a season in San Diego. Those times taught him to find solutions, thinking outside the box, not looking for excuses. That's probably going to serve him really well in this upcoming season because, as I'll discuss in the next segment, the Lightning's offseason has not exactly started out with a bang for Syracuse. And if Bouchard is going to do anything with this roster, that, to be honest with you, is not looking all that competitive as of right now, he is definitely going to have to think outside of the box. So it'll be interesting for sure to see where he goes with his first season in Syracuse. And, you know, as Brent has discussed and as I've discussed too, given that it's the team's 30th anniversary season, it would be nice. I think it would hold more weight if we saw a little bit of a more competitive team this upcoming season that gelled a little bit better and that was able to work for each other a little bit more, because the team last season really seemed to enjoy playing with each other. They really seemed to like it. But when push came to shove, when the team got into the playoffs, when the team was inconsistent all season long, it just didn't seem like that was enough. So hopefully Bouchard will have a way to change that for Syracuse's upcoming season. I wish I had better news to talk about in this segment, but unfortunately, I don't. The Lightning has really focused on their own needs during the start of free agency. And I do want to stress that it's only July 4th. So it's entirely possible that before the end of the summer, they fix some of the holes that a lot of fans are currently seeing in Syracuse's roster. There is concern out there amongst the fans about what the Crunch's roster currently looks like, and concerns that this is not going to give the new head coach and his team the ability to really show what they can do and the ability to perform to their top level, because Bouchard can have as high of a bar as he wants to, but if he doesn't have the talent to reach that bar, then it doesn't matter. So right now, things are looking a little thin. And one of the issues with trying to predict the Crunch's roster as of right now is that there are a couple of main concerns right up front. One, the Lightning still has a couple of spaces that could very well be filled by the likes of Alex Barry-Boulay, Cole Koepke, or Gage Gonsalves. So any trio of those, in addition to some of the free agents that the Lightning have signed, such as Mike Mitchell Chaffee, and, you know, any of those could potentially fill up a spot in the Lightning's roster. All of those players also will have to go through waivers, except for Gage Gonsalves, I think. Gabriel Fortier is another name that could also potentially fill in with the Lightning this upcoming season. So there's a lot of fluidity right now about bubble players versus not bubble players, who might make the Lightning out of camp, who might not, what's that going to look like? And then you bring waivers into the discussion. Will Barry Boulay survive waivers again? I don't know. I don't know. You know, the Lightning has had situations happen in the past where they've tried to send players down to Syracuse through waivers and they don't clear. And that can really mess with Syracuse's roster, especially if they're counting on those players to be veteran presence that are going to score, which, you know, always nice. Other than those players that I've already mentioned, Simon Rifors, who has been qualified but has not actually signed a contract yet, I'm pretty sure that will come. And of course, team captain Gabriel Dumont, who is on an AHL contract, so he's not listed on any like cap-friendly rosters or anything, but he will still be with the team. He has 1 year remaining in his AHL contract. The team looks young on the forward end of things, by far. So it's concerning. One of the issues that the team faced last season was just simply that the scoring wasn't spread out enough throughout the roster to survive injuries and call-ups. The team had very low secondary scoring totals to the point where if one player was out of the roster for whatever reason, they really struggled. And the roster that I'm looking at right now, Ilya Usayu, Walteri Merella, Maxim Groshev. Some of these players we're not even sure if they're going to come over or not. Lucas Edmonds, Bennett MacArthur, Felix Robert, Jaden Drew, Gage Gonsalves, Jack Finley, Gabriel Fortier, Cole Koepke, Mitchell Chaffee, Alex Barry-Boulay, Simon Rifors. The average age of those players, and again, Dumont's not included in this. This would brain leaks up a little bit, but still, is 23 years old. And I even gave them a little bit of an edge because of Dumont, because it's really 22.9. So the average age of this forward core, and this also doesn't include Sean Element, who was recently signed to an AHL contract, which was great to see. Element's season was a little bit up and down with injuries last year, but he's really loved amongst the fan base. He works really hard. He's that grinder player that maybe we also aren't seeing on this roster. So it was good to see him being brought back. So he's not included in this either. And he is 23 years old. So he's not going to help that average at all. This is a young forward core. This is a young group. Over on the blue line, which, if you all remember, was one of my major drum pounding issues last year. The blue line was also a concern. The defense was very thin, especially when Darren Radish was recalled and not returned, and Trevor Carrick went down with injury. It was rough. So the average age of the blue line as of right now is 22.3. As of right now, Syracuse only has six defensemen on roster. Five of them are still on their entry-level contracts. So five of those players are in their first, second, or third year in the league because your entry-level contract is usually for three seasons. So the only player that doesn't fit into that mold is Sean Day, who was given his annual yearly show-me contract that the Lightning loves handing out to prospects that haven't quite put it together enough yet to make the Lightning, but might. So they give them that yearly a contract extension, and he is 25. So right now, Emil Liljeberg, Maxwell Crozier, Declan Carlisle, Jack Thompson, Roman Schmidt, Sean Day. Those are Syracuse's defensemen. There's a possibility that either Darren Radish or Philip Myers might come down from the Lightning, because the Lightning recently signed Calvin DeHaan, who's a defenseman. So that added a little bit of a cushion to the Lightning's blue line. Hey, good for them. Clearly, they learned their lesson when they realized that they had no blue line depth after one recall last season. So theoretically, those players could be sent down. The question becomes, again, will Radish or Myers survive waivers? Personally, I think Myers has a bigger chance of surviving waivers than Radish. I also think that the Lightning is going to be really eager to bury Myers' $1.4 million contract in the minor leagues to give them some cap space. But then that begs the question, will the Lightning be willing to bury $1.4 million in an AHL defenseman? Or are they just going to trade him at some point in time in the coming weeks? Because that's a lot of money to just send down to your AHL club. Will the Lightning do it? Yeah, they will. They've proven that. Those Corey Konecker contracts come to mind that were absolutely ridiculous, and they literally did it so that nobody would claim Konecker on waivers and he'd get to actually play for Syracuse. So the Lightning would do this. They did it last season when they sent Myers to Syracuse. They will do it. But I could also see them trading Myers. Now, the hope, obviously, if they go that route, is that they would somehow acquire an AHL defenseman for Syracuse, because even with Myers being sent down, again, this blue line is suspect. I'm sorry, it is. There's not enough proven talent. When you would have Day and Myers as your top pairing, if you're the Syracuse Crunch this upcoming season, looking at these players. And then after that, you have a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, a 22-year-old, and two 23-year-olds. And the 22-year-old, Liljeberg, he's been overseas this whole time. So that's exciting. Crozier hasn't managed to make it stick with Syracuse. He only played 9 games at the end of last season once his NCAA time was done with Providence College, and 5 games in the playoffs where he did very little. So he is extremely untried at the AHL level. That's why he's 23 but didn't have that much AHL experience before now. Carlisle is a developing prospect. He's done a lot of good work with Syracuse within the developmental system. Thompson looked really good last season. Schmidt is brand new. Like, this is worrying. And, you know, one of the things that we learned the hard way last season was that your AHL depth greatly affects your recall status when you're the NHL club and you need to bring players up because of injuries. God forbid somebody on the Lightning roster goes down for longer than a game or two and Syracuse again loses a Philip Myers or a Sean Day, just like they lost Darren Radish last season, and it's going to be the same frustrating cycle that happened last season. To add on to that same frustrating cycle is simply that the goaltending in Syracuse's end is shaky. So the general thought process amongst Lightning fans and Crunch fans right now is that the Lightning really want to push Hugo Alnefelt, who is 22 years old, to be Syracuse's number one this upcoming season. Alnefelt struggled with injuries last season. He ended up splitting time with Max Legacé. They each played almost the same amount of games last season. That was not the original plan, but that was what ended up happening. He ended the season with a 2.77 goals against average. So he let in almost 3 goals a game, pretty regularly, pretty consistently. But on the other side of things, a 0.904 save percentage. So, you know, that's pretty good as far as AHL goalies go. However, the amount of goals that Syracuse had scored against them last season was one of the highest in the league. There's a pattern here when you have a shaky defense that can't clear rebounds and you have rebound machines like Alnefeld and Legace in net, you're going to have a lot of goals scored against you. It's how you play the game, which means on the other end of the ice, you have to score a lot of goals too, which with the forward core that I'm looking at right now, I'm just not sure if this is going to be possible. And can you tell I'm panicking just a little bit? So that's what we have right now. We have Alnefeld as Syracuse's potential number one. I really think the Lightning want him to be positioned in that way so that they can start kind of training up Vavilevskiy's backup because, as I've stated many times, promoting a 22-year-old to the NHL and then having them sit, not the best developmental plan. Then we have Matt Tompkins, who is 29 years old and has not played in the American Hockey League since 2021, where he played 15 games with the Rockford Ice Hogs. He's been overseas ever since then. His last... In the SHL, he played 32 games. He had a 2.52 goals against average, so he let in about 2.5 goals a game, 0.911 save percentage. So a little bit better, but again, different league. So he is theoretically probably the veteran backup for Syracuse this season, although obviously if Alnefelt isn't up to it, Tompkins will probably be taking over, but Tompkins is also a relatively unknown prospect at this time. And then the third goalie in Syracuse's organization is going to be Evan Fitzpatrick. So he's on an AHL contract and he will probably spend most of the year with the Orlando Solar Bears, who, you know, is Syracuse's ECHL club. But, you know, he'll be in there if in case Syracuse needs anybody, but he's also, you know, he's 25 years old. Last season, he got in one game with Charlotte in the American Hockey League and was in the ECHL the rest of the time, where he had 17 contests with the Florida Everblades. So, I mean, he has all of 13 AHL career games. And granted, the scouting team has found a lot of great players in the past, diamonds in the rough, that have come in as AHL backups and have done the job. Not questioning that. I'm just questioning what the plan is. If you're going to hand a brand new coach to the organization this roster and expect him to gain more playoff success than the previous coach has had with a roster that on paper looks a heck of a lot better than this, what's the plan? How? How? I'm a little flummoxed as to what they are planning on doing with this. There is still time. Free agency is not won on day one. Free agency is not won in week one. It's very possible that the Lightning is working things behind the scenes. Maybe they will trade Myers. Maybe that will allow them to pick up a different player. I have no idea. But it's a little worrisome right now that this is Syracuse's roster on paper, especially with a lot of the question marks that are there. Also, can I just say how angry I am that Luke Glendening is now in the organization? Some of you won't know why and be thankful that you don't. But for those of you who do know, I hope you share my anger there. I was very unhappy when I saw that he is now in the organization. But anyways, God almighty, I hope he never gets sent down. Although I realize that that's probably biting off my nose to spite my face. But I am nothing if not petty when it comes to my hockey team and my long-standing grudges against people and players will speak to that. But anyways, you know, I hope the Lightning is not done. And I think that that's where I'm going to end this. I hope they are not done.
I think that will do it for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm open to interactions and feedback, so please feel free to get in touch with me over Twitter. My hockey Twitter is FPHCrunch, FPHCRUNCH, and my personal Twitter is Allovimo, Allovimo. My personal Twitter is protected, but if you want to send me a follow request and I can see that you're a hockey person, I would be more than happy to go ahead and add you over there. Before we go, I'd also like to thank Purple Planet Music and Kevin McLeod for providing the royalty-free music heard in this episode. Keep taking care of each other out there in Crunchland, and I will see you next time.